Welcome aboard this week's edition of Sports Light FYI. If you're looking for sports talk with a different flavor, humor, candor, and historical perspectives, well, you're on the right flight. For the next hour, Sean Bush of Stats LLC in Chicago, Nicole Smith out of the Queen City, and yours truly, James Hill, will be your pilots. Let's get busy with this week's FYI topic. This week is the last week of the NFL preseason games. As of a week from Thursday, September 8th, the Super Bowl champs New England Patriots host Randy Moss and the Oakland Raiders, 9 p.m. on ABC. That opens up the 2005 NFL season. It got me to thinking about the great coaches in the NFL, those legendary coaches such as Don Shula, Chuck Knoll, Tom Landry, Paul Brown, all legendary, just to name a few. But looking at today's crop of coaches, who are the greatest today as far as you are concerned? Sean, Nicole?
Did you say crop of coaches or crop?
Crop of coaches.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those shows. I just see that right now. Well, for me, when you look at as far as the top five coaches, well, obviously, it's real easy to pick number one. And he is probably the most boringest person in the face of the planet. But he knows how to coach some football. And that's Belichick from the New England Patriots, because he is this decade's dynasty in sports. For the simple reason of the pure dominance that the New England Patriots has had over the course of the 4 years. And you just look at what they've done and with the structure as far as NFL with the salary cap, where people can come and go just like a revolving door. And for them to get it right 3 out of the 4 years is absolutely amazing. So that is number one. Then basically 2 through 5, it's basically you can go ahead and just really throw a whole bunch of names on the wall and just see who sticks. For the simple reason, my number two is, even though he's had a very, very crappy run of it, Bill Parcells, for the simple reason of the longevity that he has had over the course of now, we're spanning close to three decades as far as what he has done with the Giants, what he's done with New England, and now what he's going to be doing with Dallas. Dallas is going to be a very approved team this year and possibly will make the playoffs. Third is very shocking for the simple reason.
You're drinking that Kool-Aid, too.
Drinking the Kool-Aid as far as, what, Dallas make it to the playoffs?
Yeah.
They got a defense. And if anything, which one of my other coaches is, defense can win. You can win and have a really crappy offense. But as long as you have a dominant defense, you can go ahead and do some things.
So you're saying they have a dominant defense?
I'm not saying that. As far as in the NFC, yes. Compared to everybody else, yes.
Okay. I like Bill Parcells as well, but I'm just looking at, you know, everyone picked them to go back to the playoffs last year, and they fell to a 6-10 record, and he did draft some kids.
Well,
there
was two reasons why they did not play very well. They had a 95-year-old quarterback in Vinny Testaverde playing, and he
that's
was
on the time that I know.
And he was on his what? His like 13th and 14th knees. You know, you can only pull so many knees out.
Well, you know, he's been known to pull rabbits out of his hat before.
But the rabbits are getting very old and very dusty.
All right.
Now you kind of upgraded, because now you only deal with a 45-year-old Drew Bledsoe. But he still has a cannon as an arm. So the offensive improved.
So instead of a pickup truck, you got a tank moving now, right?
Pretty much.
As far as mobility.
Because Bledsoe ain't moving. They better hold that. They gotta hold the offensive line. Gotta hold their blocking assignments really good, because you won't see Bledsoe running. That's how he lost his job in Buffalo. New England.
Yeah,
he ran.
Yeah.
He got plastered, and that was it.
And they stuck in that number six draft pick. What was his name?
That Brady guy.
Oh, yeah. Was that from the Brady Bunch?
Who knew? I guess so. But, hey, let's not talk about Brady and the Brady Bunch because that's a clean image, and he's trying to stay away from that.
Now, that's right. He is trying to stay away from that.
Now, if he start running with 50 or Suge Knight, we're in some trouble.
Well, if he starts running with Suge Knight, he probably won't be running on the field.
He's dead.
He'll be under the field, yes.
So you look at my number three person, and a lot of people just don't give him the credit where it's due. And for the simple reason, he's, quote-unquote, never wins the big game, but he's still a good coach. And that's Tony Dungy of the Indianapolis Colts. And the reason he hasn't won the big games is just basically because of just missed opportunities and lost chances. But he's still a great coach. He goes about it in a very un-NFL, really unsportslike manner, close to Bill Belichick, is for the simple reason he's just quiet. He's just very quiet, and he let his players do his thing. For New England...
He's not too happy right now. I mean, they haven't... I think they're 0-4 for the preseason.
But that's the preseason. And my motto is, especially with football, if you don't win a preseason game, you're going very far in the playoffs. Because nobody really cares about preseason.
That's also true for teams that are rebuilding, teams that have... poor one-loss records from the past year or the past 2 years. Don't you think it's important for their confidence level that they start to win, even if it is in preseason?
No, absolutely. Well, you look at the past couple of years, and as teams who made it to the playoffs, look at their preseason records. Preseason records were really, really crappy, and it's just really basically a trend. Nobody really cares about preseason. They're not there. You have players who's not even going to make the team, who's going to probably be playing in Arena 2, playing in these games during the third and fourth quarters. It's that really doesn't even matter. They're wearing just the uniform because they're trying to get a job. So it's not about really wins or losses. It's about seeing if you can pick a diamond in the rough to go ahead and put in your team, and maybe they can do well for you either in special teams or step into a role when a starter is injured. But preseason does matter. If anything, they need to shorten it down for the simple reason of the risk of injuries of their players.
But what about the preparation for the season? I mean, then if they don't have a preseason, which they have shortened over the years. At one time, there were like 6 preseason games.
And that's ridiculous.
It was almost 2 months in training camp as well. But that was prior to the salaries being where they are today. And that was also prior to players working out for the entire year. Because at one time, believe it or not, all pro players, including the NFL, they had other jobs when the season was over.
Right. But see, that was back when, you were still a teenager and was able
That's
to take...
That's when Papa Hallis and I used to have dinner together.
Exactly. So, I'm not even going to joke on Papa Hallis around there, not in Chicago.
Yeah, especially being from Chicago. Talk about Papa Hallis and Da Bear.
Hey, like I said, I have a few morals. I have a few morals, but I have some, and I'm not talking about Bob Harris.
Who's your final one?
My final one is, believe it or not, and this might actually just shock you, Mike Holmgren. For the simple reason, he hasn't done absolutely positively crap in Seattle. For the simple reason, how their structure was. And as far as, like, every wide receiver they had except for Jerry Rice dropping balls. Like, it's something in Seattle, if you're a wide receiver, you're going to drop 10 balls a year. And dropping those balls actually is the reason why they have not made it to the playoffs, because they lost some very key games on this. But that doesn't mean he's not a great coach. He's not a good coach and GM. He let that go, and you saw them improve. I actually believe in the weakest league, weakest division in the NFL. They will be battling with another team that's very shocking about that. That is Arizona to come out of the Western champ. That's number four. And number five is Bill Belichick, because he has proven you don't even need to have an offense and go ahead and win the Super Bowl, because long as you have a defense, and he is a defensive-minded coach, long as you have the defense, defense always wins championships. He rode them. He's still riding them right now. They're going to always still be a contender to come out of the AFC. As long as they get some receivers, they're going to actually go ahead and win the Super Bowl probably in the next couple of years.
Now, you mentioned Belichick, but you said Belichick was your number one.
I'm sorry.
You're talking about...
Brian, right.
No, you're talking
the other
about Holmgren.
No, not Holmgren. I'm talking about the coach for Baltimore is my number five pick. And I can't... Obviously, I said his name wrong.
Oh, okay.
Billick, thank
Brian
you.
Brian Billick,
I'm sorry. That's the person who I was talking about as far as...
Your number five.
That's my number five. So, like I said, it's a little shocking, but
yeah, he did
look
win
at the culture.
One Super Bowl. No, personally, I don't like his personality. He seems
arrogant.
Condescending at times and arrogant at times, but that's part of his personality.
That's part of his rub. That's how you do his thing.
Yeah. Plus, I don't care for Baltimore that much anyway. But that's another story for another day.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, darn. Did I hit a sore spot?
We need to find out why.
Nicole, what do you say about
that? Ooh, hit a sore spot. Moving on.
Wow, it sounds like Sean and I prepared our list together.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah. Birds of a feather, huh?
Great minds think alike.
Yeah, I have a slight variation, but what I did was I just made a list of many.
You just got a different flavor.
And then just narrowed it down. Belichick definitely made the list, but he was not my number one.
Oh!
Ooh!
Oh!
Wow, oh. Do tell. Who is your number one?
You've always been known to be controversial.
All right. I'm not the controversial one here.
Oh, okay.
It's only controversy when you all disagree.
Okay.
Okay, I'll take that mantle.
Wait a minute. I am on the edge of my seat. If Belichick for today is not your number one.
Yeah.
Who is your number one?
I don't know. You might have to tease us and go with five up to one now. Cause
you start at number five and work your way up.
Cause this is gonna be good. Cause I have a strange feeling one of us is gonna go ahead and darn near curse you out.
Now, you wouldn't do that, would you?
Yeah, you don't know me that well.
Start with number five.
Okay, my number five is Bill Parcells.
Okay.
Basically, for his longevity, for how he motivates his players, Bill Parcells should definitely be on anyone's list. But again, all of Sean's commentary I agree with, so I'm just going to go through my list. Number four, Mike Holmgren. See, that surprises you, doesn't it?
I actually did.
Number three, Mike Shanahan. Yes, Mike made my list.
Oh,
again,
Denver? Okay.
Yeah, Denver Broncos. But again, longevity was a factor for me as well as, because a lot of them haven't, because, we have a lot of new coaches and we got a lot of, 5 or 6 years and under coaches.
Right.
Who, over time.
Yeah, we have gone through a number of coaches over the past, say, 5 to 8 seasons. They've averaged changing 3 to 5 coaches per year.
Exactly. So, Mike Shanahan made my list. Shut up, Sean.
No, that actually stunned me. I'm not, I'm really rearing because, I already know who number two is. Because if he ain't number one, you've already down to three. You've already up to two. So we already know what number two is.
So he was number three.
Yes,
Shanahan was three.
Now I had
what impresses you about Shanahan? I mean, he has gone to the Super Bowl and he has won 2 Super Bowls. But a lot of people credit that more to John Elway than to Shanahan, and the fact that Elway has retired. He hasn't sniffed the Super Bowl since.
For the 12 years that Shanahan has coached, his record is right up there with Holmgren.
Wow.
Okay. Well, if you're going to use Holmgren for a criteria, I suppose so.
Well, that shuts you up, James. It shouldn't shut me up.
I said if you're going to use Holmgren as a criteria, yeah.
Okay.
Well, exactly. Need I say more?
No, you don't.
Shanahan has won a little better than 100 games overall in his career.
Okay.
Yeah. And you said you were comparing him with Holmgren to see what Mike Holmgren was doing?
Mm-hmm.
Holmgren has won probably in excess of 120 games.
But how many coaches have won 100 games in this league?
You mean coaching today?
Yeah, it's not that many.
Well, no, you have to have some longevity.
Well, and that's what she basically said. So, you know, hey, I was scratching my head a little bit, but, you know, when she put it like that, yeah, okay, he should be on that list.
All right.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
I don't agree with it, but okay, everybody has their own.
That's two, okay.
Figures.
Continue.
My number two is a tie.
Is a tie?
Is a tie. Okay.
You always have a different twist, you know that?
Always.
Yes,
see?
You do. That's what makes you so into the scene.
That's how I keep you on the edge of that seat.
Yes, you got
okay,
me there.
Now. Okay,
I'm
hold
jiggling.
On.
I'm jiggling.
Because this is going to seem like two extremes, but again, just like I had to defend my Mike Shanahan pick to make you see the light, just go with me on this, okay?
She's such a tease.
We're going to ride you.
Okay.
All right.
Bill Belichick.
All right.
And drum roll.
This is number two now. You're talking about a tie at the number two spot, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. I just want to make sure.
Okay.
Because I want to smoke what you're smoking.
Wow.
I'll give you some.
All right. Break me off a little something.
That's right.
All right.
Washington Redskins.
Joe Gibbs?
Okay.
When you look at longevity,
whoa.
I can go with Gibbs.
Whoa, but he's been gone for like.
But he came back last season.
He left like when I was six.
Oh, he did not. He did not.
He was gone a month.
But I can't put him up there because he can be gone, come back, and still have a competitive record.
Okay. The reason he came back is Snyder threw him a boatload of money to bring back the glory days of the Redskins. Let's call that like it is. Hold up.
He
got a boatload of money. He wasn't going to, like, Arizona and coach them.
Okay, just like your friend said, look, he's your friend now when he disagrees with me, that Elway was the reason Denver Broncos was getting all the hype. But, okay, let's say you end up with Shaq on your team. Let's say you end up with T.O. or back in the day, Warren Moon as a quarterback or whoever.
Or if you're a coach like Phil Jackson.
If you only
go where you have stars.
If you just happen to be there, I mean, look at the Bulls bench when Michael.
Whoa. Okay. You hitting a touchy subject when you're talking about the Bulls now, especially in the early 90s. You cannot tell me you are comparing Joe Gibbs coming back to the Redskins and Phil Jackson going to the Lakers. You can't compare that.
That's not what I'm comparing.
Okay.
What I'm saying is, if you happen to be the coach and you have a phenomenal player or phenomenal players, no matter what sport, then you get that credit for being the coach at that particular time with that particular team with that particular superstar or superstars. And
amen.
Whether it's your coaching, whether it's the team,
amen.
If you're the coach, you get the credit. Do you not?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
All right.
So I'm not comparing Phil Jackson with Joe Gibbs. I'm just saying.
Preach it to the choir.
Okay. You know what? Because I was going to continue to go with you, but for the simple reason, I finally got what you, the last part of what you're saying. The reason you put those two together is for the simple reason they have the same amount of titles as far as Super Bowl wins, and therefore that is based, and also the longevity is the reason that they're tied.
Thank you very much.
Okay, moving. Okay, cool. I am down with you on that. Now, because you said that, and you are such a tease with this.
Wait,
those two. Hold on.
Get to the number one.
Exactly, and I'm setting her up for the number one for this reason alone, because.
Imagine.
imagine who your number one is.
Thank you. Because, hold on.
No,
I don't. Because I am thinking, and I'm thinking hard. I'm thinking hard that it's hurting my head. Both Belichick and Gibbs has 3 Super Bowl titles. As far as I know, that is tied for the most active,
as far as active coaches.
Right. So I am thinking long and hard, and I'm going to actually probably put my head through a wall if it's this darn obvious, because I don't see if those are number 2, and you're going through this. Please tell me who your number 1 is. I am begging you. I am on my hands and knees.
Who is your number 1?
Okay.
I may be
hanging up after this. So that Sean can have his breakdown all by himself. But for me, so let me just preface this, okay? I stand by my choice, number 1, okay? Number 2.
God, he's a tease.
What was that?
I see the teams, because I am looking through the NFL and trying to find out. Please tell me who it is.
Okay, listen. And number 2, along with that, okay, I mean, he has a good record, he has the longevity, but I'm a fan, okay?
Okay, so it's bias. Okay,
I'm
good.
I'm a fan.
Whew, I feel better now.
So you did qualify it.
Pittsburgh Steelers.
Bill Cowher. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, other than the fact that you are a fan, why else did you choose Bill Cowher?
No, that is it.
That's it?
That's it.
Oh, okay.
No, didn't I just say longevity?
Yeah,
he's been in his job and with his one team longer than anyone else in the NFL.
Yeah.
So he's the granddaddy of the granddaddy.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's like, not only that, he's also probably in the top 5 as far as coaches in the professional sports.
Well, if you go back 10 seasons, then he's the winningest coach in the NFL, discounting playoff. He's the winningest coach in the
NFL. Yeah, because he can't win.
He's gotten his team to the playoffs. I think he's only missed the playoffs 3 or 4 times, period.
Okay, so do I get just an ounce?
That's not a bad pick.
Here's the problem with it. Comparing what
but
she
not,
did.
Not at number 1.
Yeah, comparing what she did, how she placed the other ones. No, this pick was basically just a biased pick. That is the reason why. Does he belong in the top 5? Yeah, I believe he does.
Yes.
I believe he does, but I do not believe he's supposed to be number 1.
That's all right, but he's in
the top 5. That's fine. That's fine, because you seriously hurt my head, so I'm glad.
The choice.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. You served your purpose. I need to go get some ice. I got to find me some Aleve, because my head is hurting.
Thank you.
Okay.
Both of you just validated the choice.
So no, I didn't validate it at number 1.
No, I didn't validate it at number 1 either.
Yeah, I do validate
him
in
the
top 5.
I didn't say validated at number 1. I said validate the choice.
Oh, okay.
And that you did. Okay. I thank you very much.
Okay, I still say we should hang up on her.
But you love me. All right, James, what did you pick?
All right, my choice is I have to go with number 5, and I'll start from the reverse order as well. Number 5, Bill Cowher. And once again, because he is the granddaddy of granddaddies as far as the NFL is concerned, he is the winningest coach in the NFL over the past 10 years, and he always has his team in the playoffs. He's only appeared in 1 Super Bowl, which they did lose, but nevertheless.
He says it's so damn condescending, which they did lose.
Which was the point?
Asses.
Man, they blew that place up.
But he's always in the playoffs. He always has his team ready to play. He has gone through this new system of free agency when it's extremely difficult to coach. So I give him his props in that particular area. My number 4 is Joe Gibbs, and that's because he has a winning percentage of better than 60%. He has won 3 Super Bowls. And he generally has his team ready to play each and every week as well. He came back last year, and I know his record was 6-10. However, give him an opportunity, give him 2 to 3 seasons, and he will have the Redskins once again in the playoffs. He didn't forget how to coach, even though Sean states that he was 6 when he last coached. Number 3 is the man who has taken two or three teams to the Super Bowl, and he has won two Super Bowls, both of which with the New York Giants. I'm referring to the Fish himself, Bill Parcells. He has also a winner of over 160 games. He is considered the guru of most coaches. Bill Belichick coached under him. Romeo Crennel coached under him. Al Groh coached under under Parcells. So Parcells is a no-nonsense type coach, and he's one of the legendary greats. He will go down in the history books of the NFL as one of the legendary greats. My number two pick is out of the city of brotherly love. I'm talking about Andy Reid. He has been in the NFC Championship game four times. He's gone to the Super Bowl once. Unfortunately, he did lose that particular Super Bowl. But once again, he's operating in the age of free agency. He's able to win, and in some cases, prior to last season, win without any type of formidable receiving core. He has an outstanding quarterback in Donovan McNabb, a decent running game. It was better when they had the gentleman that's now in Pittsburgh.
Deuce Staley
there. But Andy Reid, primarily because of his winning record and also because of his four times in NFC and his Super Bowl appearance, is number two. And obviously, to everyone, the number one has to be...
Well, not to Nicole.
And he was at one time, he cut his teeth on head coaching on the North Coast, the best city in the nation.
Can I go ahead and throw up now?
I'm referring to Cleveland.
For real.
I'm referring to Cleveland, Bill Belichick. He's been the winner of the three of the last four Super Bowls. And Belichick just continues to operate with injuries, without injuries, with free agency, without a high payroll, cutting name stars, Lawyer Malloy, Law this year. He traded his quarterback, Bledsoe, installed the number six pick in Tom Brady, and continues to win. The man just has a good knack for not only players, but for his assistants as well. You know, you're only as great as those people that you hire to work with you. And Belichick has shown that he learned a great deal since he left Cleveland. So Belichick is my number one.
And as much as you're crediting Belichick, you know, somebody else will say, well, it's the front office, it's the management, it's the owner, more so.
Well, they have an outstanding general manager in Scott Pioli as well. Yeah. Scott Pioli is an outstanding vice president and general manager. And they work in concert. They work very well together. As a matter of fact, they came close to losing Scott this past season as they lost their two coordinators, their offensive and defensive coordinators. Scott Pioli was pursued by a handful of NFL teams, one of which was the Browns, and he gave serious consideration to leaving, but he did remain. So, and I expect that Belichick will also have New England in the hunt this year, even without his former coordinators.
And I still believe it's going to be probably too much because you lost both of your coordinators to jobs, and I think it's going to be a little bit too much for them.
Do you think you'll have them in the hunt?
They're going to be in there, absolutely. But I believe if Indianapolis gets home field advantage, Indianapolis will be the AFC representative in Super Bowl 40.
Has Indianapolis improved their defense, or have they matured enough for you to really say that? Because everyone knows they can score. That's not a problem when you've got Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne.
I honestly believe Indianapolis is going to go basically a mature route of the Phoenix Suns on turf. They're just going to outscore you. But I do believe they do add
Peyton broke the record at 49 touchdowns.
Well, the problem was they played in 20-degree New England, and let's be honest. When you're in a nice, cozy 70-degree dome, going into 20-degree weather with the wind blowing, just going to chap your hide.
Just
in more ways than one.
This ain't your cup of tea.
It's just not your cup of tea, and for the simple reason that, let's be honest, New England kind of bends the rules a little bit. They bend them where they don't get called for fouls, but bends them nonetheless.
You know, still staying on the topic of the NFL, and as I mentioned, the season begins next week in earnest. Probably the biggest story today is the fact that the Denver Broncos, after choosing Maurice Claret at the number 3 spot as far as the third round in this year's draft, reportedly are going to cut him. Now, my question is, will Maurice learn his lesson, and will he take 2 steps back to take 1 step forward? In other words, will he be willing to go to someone else's practice squad and possibly after that play in NFL Europe next year to prove that he can play in this league? Or perhaps he just can't play in this league. Sean?
It's not if he's willing. It's not if he's willing to go and play on the practice squad. Nobody's going to take him because of that contract he signed.
No, well, the contract is nothing because he didn't get anything. He signed a contract for incentive,
but
so the Broncos wound up paying nothing. He could have gotten at least $100,000 for signing.
But that's what he's going to go ahead and ask for. This guy is not going to swallow his pride. I think he has proven that he's not going to go ahead and swallow his pride and understand about certain things. This is not a person who's willing to do that. So, no, I don't see him going to a practice squad and willing to be a special teams person. No, I don't see him going to NFL Europe. No, I don't even see him going to a arena league. You know, he's going to keep on trying to demand, thinking somebody's going to be, quote-unquote, stupid enough and give him a chance. The path that he's ending up is he's going to go into another running back who is in for doing some stupid stuff off the field. And that's Lawrence Phillips. And lo and behold, what he decides to do this week, he decides to take a Hyundai and start running over kids over a fight over a pickup football game. We saw how far he declined.
So some people never learn. You know, the last time I remember hearing about an athlete taking a car and chasing kids with it, do you know the story I'm referring to? This was a baseball player.
I think I do, but
Albert Bell, when he was with the Cleveland Indians,
well,
it was Halloween, and the kids had egged his house because he didn't give them any candy.
Well, no offense, Albert was not really all the way up on the top floor anyway. Now, granted, I would say that on the phone. I would never say that in his face.
But that's what I thought of when I read that article about Phillips.
But no offense.
He does not learn. And plus, he continues to beat women.
Yeah.
He continues to beat his girlfriend. There was a warrant out for his arrest for beating his girlfriend.
Yeah, like, anybody really, any of these girls really don't read the paper and know who this guy is? Because he's done it since Nebraska.
Yes. No, they don't care.
Well,
what, they like those roughnecks.
That's what they like.
Well, moving on.
Yes, absolutely.
Because here's my thing. If somebody eggs my house getting back to Albert Bell, I might want to run them over with a car, too. Have you ever got your house egged?
That's the last player that I thought of in that particular area. Also, the cuts begin this week, and the teams have to be down to 65, and next week they have to be down to the roster of 53. So,
well, look on the bright side. All the quarterbacks is going to get cut all over the league. They at least can get one. They at least have a shot of going to one other city to possibly get a job, even a starting job. That's here in Chicago.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What's the story now? Is Kyle Orton going to become the starting quarterback?
Yes, and that's just basically by necessity. We have one
who's going to be Blake.
He's going to be the backup.
He's still learning the system.
Yeah, well, you know, Blake is how old? 73? You know, it takes a while. You know this, James. It just takes a while. But Hutchinson just basically played himself out of the league. He's just been terrible. He just picked the wrong sport. He should have stuck to baseball. Just that simple. Orton, just playing like an NFL quarterback is the reason why he's starting quarterback. With Grossman, everybody keeps on saying 2 to 3 months. Orton is gone for the rest of the year. Grossman is gone for the rest. He's going to miss his second year. He's going to miss the year with a broken ankle. And that's hence the reason why I am saying about as far as shorting preseason, for the simple reason of these injuries that we've had over the course of, heck, the course of 10 years, where players are playing, and I do understand they do need to play and gain conditions and stuff like that. But 4 games is just extremely too much for the investments that the owners are putting into these players to go ahead and have your star players getting injured like this, as far as severely as in other sports who does preseason. It's just crazy.
Well, I mean, oftentimes it's up to the coaches, and the starters really don't stay in that much, especially in game one and in game two. Let's talk about a quarterback. Generally, in game one, he plays 2 to 4 series in the first quarter, and in game two, he might play a couple of series. Now, when they play them for any length of time, it generally is up to halftime. That's the third game of the season, preseason. And then the fourth game of the preseason, they're out there for maybe a series or two. And in some cases, the starters don't even play, depending upon the history and the health of that particular player.
It
depends upon the coach. So.
It's still, I honestly believe it's just still too much to play for.
To play? 2 games?
2 games to be done with it. Okay. I truly believe that. I don't think you don't need that much playing experience. Stop carrying 90 players. Stop carrying 90 players. That's the reason why you have to have 4 games so you can see out.
They're looking at free agents.
You're cutting them down to 65 at the beginning of the week,
right.
And then at the end of next week, you got to cut them down to 53.
Right.
But you had 90 for the last month. So you cut a third of your team, and then you got to cut 10% within a week. That's just retarded. That's just retarded. Bring it down. Have it start off with 65, and then just basically do like Survivor and just start having cut days, either Wednesday and Friday or every week, and be done with this. Because this is it's really retarded, as you see players getting constantly injured over and over again. The only benefit for the preseason is the owners, because they're charging regular season prices for these for the fans to come and watch star player, the players who's going to be playing for one or two series. It's just ridiculous. The only people who benefit is the owners. That's it.
And especially with the coaching that I've done, you don't go down to the wire just not knowing who you're picking. They already know before it gets down to the wire. And so all of that's just prolonging it.
Yeah. You're basically picking. All this is you're basically picking your last 10 players on the roster who's most likely either playing special teams or being on the being third on the depth chart.
Mm-hmm.
That's what preseason is about. Everybody knows who's playing what. Who's playing in what position, and it gives people salving and drooling over any type of controversy, like the thing that's going on with Miami and the quarterback, because it's not a quarterback controversy, it's quarterback competition. Bull crap. Both of these guys are terrible. Somebody has to start the game. It's just that simple. So what we're going to decide to do is we're going to start both of them. Nick Saban, have you lost your mind? Has your brain is still left in Louisiana with everything that's going on? Because that's what it sounds like to me. You are distracted. You obviously have family in Louisiana. Because if you say you're going to have two quarterbacks playing equal time in a regular season game, I believe the Denver Broncos did that, and that's why Dan Reeves got let go.
What do you think about him just simply blowing smoke? Because, number one,
pun intended.
He does not like to give information to the media. His players nor his coaches can speak to the media without his permission. So I'm thinking that he might be just blowing smoke.
And stop playing with the high school games. Stop playing with the high school games. Why you gotta have permission? We talking about some. Everybody in there is grown men. What you talking about? You gotta have permission to talk to the media. Stop playing kiddie games. Pick a darn quarterback. It's been done through the history of time. Pick a quarterback and let's move on. Gus Frerotte's gonna be the quarterback. Gus Frerotte has played better than everybody who stepped behind the center. Stop playing games. Stop with this bull crap. You're going to win four games anyway. You're going to get the number two pick. You're probably going to heck, the Bengals going to have more wins than these guys, and that's saying something because the Bengals, let's be honest, have been terrible for the last three decades.
Well, I wouldn't say the last two seasons they've been terrible. They've been 8-8 for the past two seasons, and though it hurts me to say it, I fully expect them to make the playoffs this season.
Who?
The Bengals.
Well, no, I understand that. I expect the Bengals to make the playoffs too. They're gonna definitely do it before the Browns do. But yeah, the Bengals gonna make the playoffs.
I'll let that slide.
The reason I threw out the Bengals
you
is
to know the intent of that comment.
Yeah, I do. That's the reason why I said it. No, the reason I threw out the Bengals because let's be honest, before the punching bag was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Then when the Buccaneers got good, the punching bag used to be the Bengals. Well,
oh,
guess
yeah.
what?
Well, the Bengals had a losing record for 12 seasons.
The Bengals.
That may be a record in the NFL.
Hell, the Bengals might win, could win the division.
No, I don't see that happening. I expect them to make it to the playoffs.
Nobody saw them making 8-8 2 years ago.
I want the record to show how y'all dogging out my Bengals.
No, I'm not dogging them out.
We're saying that they're going to make the playoffs.
I haven't said a word.
No, I'm not dogging them.
Didn't we say they were going to make the playoffs?
Yeah, yes, we did.
So that's dogging out your Bengals.
Oh, my goodness. It's like giving a backhand compliment.
Which one? How about a backhand compliment? What?
No, I did do a backhand. I do. Whoa. Wait.
To the penthouse.
Well, hold on. Now I'm going to have to jump on the fence and be on her side because there was a backhanded comment for the simple reason I said how terrible they was. That was a backhanded comment until recently. So both of y'all got points. One of you, James, you was right on one end, and Nicole, you was right on the other.
And all I'm saying is let the record show. So as soon as y'all want to shed a tear, because I don't have the most pleasant thing to say about the team that you're fans.
Wait, hold on. If anybody should be crying at this three when it's dealing with football, it's me and my town. Because both of y'all, no, James is going to be actually crying more with Cleveland because they just terrible. But the Bears just stink. Because they're going to be in last place in this division.
Anyway, we beat this horse more than enough. And as Nicole stated, moving on. Last week, the hottest topic, obviously, was Bob Huggins, the situation at the University of Cincinnati, and basically his termination. Now, to give us an update for this week, it's my understanding that the school has announced a interim head coach. And who better to speak on this subject than the Queen City gal herself, than Nicole?
Yes. It was announced that Andy Kennedy will be interim coach for the Cincinnati, or the UC Bearcats. And Andy Kennedy, he was the assistant coach and recruiting coordinator under Huggins. In 2001, he then was promoted to associate head coach in 2004, just moving up in the ranks. And some history on Andy, he served as assistant coach at Birmingham for five seasons. And he also played one season at North Carolina State before transferring to Birmingham. And he became the number two all-time leading scorer at Birmingham. He played one season in the NBA and three seasons in Europe. So with his recruiting background, as well as all the other history that he has, he actually came highly recommended from Bob Huggins to take over the position because looking at it from the perspective of the seniors on the team, that's someone who they're very comfortable with and they don't feel as threatened, I would say, or as left behind, if you will, from Huggins' departure with Andy stepping into the role.
So how does that, or how will that affect the young men that have given a verbal that they will be attending the University of Cincinnati? Will he be able to retain those recruits?
Well, it's viewed as two ways. With his relationship that he's established with those players, as well as having the blessing of Bob Huggins to take over the position, that may soften the blow for some of these potential players to continue, you know, on their road towards UC, and some may back out altogether, and that's viewed as, well, those players probably wouldn't have come even if Bob Huggins was still there. That's something we'll never know. They'll either confirm or deny that later on when they're asked, but it's viewed as a situation where if anybody can retain them, Andy Kennedy can.
And is it expected that his name will go in the hat when they are officially looking for a permanent coach? Because it's my understanding now that his title is interim.
Correct. It is interim. And to my knowledge, he hasn't voiced whether he even wants that as a permanent position or not. So everybody is sitting on the edge of their seat waiting for that final announcement to come. But as far as him being a part of that pool, I'm sure if he wants to be, that will happen, but he hasn't announced that one way or the other. I think he's just focused on making sure the athletes who are there, you know, are comfortable with him, trying to get their game plan together to have a winning season as they go into the Big East.
Now, thinking about coaching styles, Huggins had a relentless type coaching style, especially on the defensive side of the ball. If you think of the Bearcats, you always think of their defense and how they can shut down most teams. You also think of their up-tempo play on the offensive side of the ball. Now, will Andy continue to play that same type of ball, or will he have some type of different philosophy?
Well, again, that's something that remains to be seen. Bob Huggins is actually still on board in a phasing in of the new coach process, as they're calling it. So he's still on board. I'm sure he will.
That's a highly lucrative process, $104,000
a month. Absolutely. Well, I guess he says you're going to get rid of me, but it'll, it ain't going to be cheap.
It's going to cost you, right?
That's right. It ain't cheap.
Well, also, you know, they got rid of Huggins, at least the word is they got rid of Huggins because of his situation with his students and how publicity regarding the program has been more negative than positive when you talk about the individuals, the Longs, the various names associated with the program that have either been in trouble with the law or something to do on campus. A number of programs that they are compared to, especially going into the Northeast, are like the University of Connecticut, Syracuse, Georgetown, etc., who for the most part do not encounter these type of situations. So, but this summer, something has happened with the water in Connecticut, because the University of Connecticut's program has had two of their point guards, the starting point guard and a red-shirted freshman, were arrested for stealing two computers and then attempting to sell those computers. Another player was thrown off the team because he was arrested twice. Now, are more college presidents going to start to adopt a stricter and even academic accountability for the athletic programs, be it the coaches, the players, and even the athletic director?
They need to, and I think they will.
And when you think of that with regards to the accountability, you think back to some schools who it didn't appear as though they were watching the shop, so to speak. And now I'm regressing back to Baylor University. And with Baylor University, most people are very much aware of the story with Dave Bliss, formerly the head coach of the Baylor Bearcats, I believe was their nickname. And everyone is also aware of what happened with Patrick Dennehy. And however, it has now come up that Dave Bliss is going to get a second opportunity. Dave Bliss has been hired by the CBA Dakota Wizards. And it's my understanding, Sean, you have something to say about that.
Brace yourself.
Sorry, I had something really caught in my throat.
So you need a glass of water?
Yeah, I actually do. So, let me go ahead and just say this. When the Baylor women's basketball team this year was going through the NCAA tournament, the number one question was, what does this run going to do to as far as Baylor, period? Not just the basketball program, but just to the school, period.
Trying to prove their image.
That was usually the first or second question out of reporters' mouths to the players and coaches. Didn't have nothing to do about their skills and nothing like this. It was talking about this one particular incident. There is no way in hell that this man should be getting another coaching job anywhere on this planet for what he has done. A lot of people still don't know the whole story or has forgotten the story. Well, let me be the one to remind of everybody of this story. He paid two players up to $40,000 and told coaching staff not to report players failed drug testing. Then, when he got the investigation started, he basically lied to folks and told them that Patrick Dennehy, who came up missing and then later found dead, that his tuition was paid by dealing drugs. He told investigators this. How in the hell you are a head coach of a Division I school, and this is beyond throwing a player under a bus. He was saying this when the man was missing. And he said it again on tape. Granted, it was somebody else that had to put him on tape. After he was found dead, that he was dealing drugs. And this was probably as a result of the reason why he died. And you're telling me, after all of those lies, and only got caught because somebody was brave enough to go ahead and record this, you're telling me that he can go ahead, get let go, release, fired, whatever. He can go, and now he is a head coach and on the professional level. I don't care if it's a minor league. On a professional level, pro team, he can get a job. That is utterly bull. And there is no way whoever hired this person should be flat out ashamed of themselves. Does people deserve a second chance? Absolutely. But we can go through the history of time and look at people who deserved a second chance, who has done far less. And one person in particular that comes to mind is Kermit Washington. He was protecting himself. It was still ugly nonetheless that he knocked Rudy Tumjohn in his face to the side of his head. Make no mistake about that. He said it. He was concerned after he did it. He got suspended and basically got blackballed out of the league. He could not get a coaching job. He couldn't do nothing in the sport of basketball because of that one simple incident. And you're going to tell me what this man has did as a coach, as teaching young men, what he did to one of his players that he gave money to.
Yeah,
and then when the trouble stopped, he looked out for number one and then go to the point of going ahead and using basically an excuse that a lot of people tend to use on young black men, period, to to justify the reason why he was missing and the reason why he was dead. And you're telling me we're gonna go ahead and give him a second chance? Please, boy.
So what you're saying is there's always an exception to the rule.
Well, it's always an exception. I might go.
He does not deserve it.
I might go to Gary because there's a CBA team in Gary. I might go and protest when he comes and plays. They might have to kick me out of the arena because I believe that strongly. This is a sham. This is an utter sham.
And I fully agree. And all he had to do was say, "I made a mistake. I take full responsibility for what happened, whatever that means, and I can only ask for your forgiveness." Those were his comments. And that's it. And he's back in.
Okay. You know what? We know it's a mistake, but we know you're a good person. So come on. We can go ahead. We believe you're a great coach. I don't give two buckets of monkey poo what kind of record this man has. He has already a huge strike against him. I'm done because my bell just went off.
Yeah, as we move on, we go to our this week's moments in Negro League history. This week, we will be dealing with barnstorming. Between 1947 and 1969, 72 Negro League players migrated from segregated play in the Negro Leagues to integrated play in the major leagues. This is their story. Barnstorming. Barnstorming for the baseball Motor Kings, traveling through tumbleweed and countryside, was as much out of the love of the game as the necessity for extra money. Games against white teams, generally in small towns, turned out to be added income for the Negro League players and small towns, often drawing thousands. Though these players made money barnstorming, white booking agents such as Sid Pollock and Nat Strong garnered most of the profits. This was just another in a long list of hardships. However, the barnstormers never lost their love of the game or flair for entertaining. Negro legends Josh Gibson, Monty Irvin, Satchel Paige, and Cool Papa Bell displayed a flair on the diamond often considered colorful in entertaining these small towns. Whether it was Satchel Paige's alley-oop or Josh Gibson's antics, the traveling all-stars displayed an appeal and professionalism not seen at the major league level. While their talents on the field were appreciated, the black players were well aware they plied their trade in a segregated society. White restaurants, hotels, theaters, nightclubs, and public accommodations in general were closed to black players. The barnstormers lived out of suitcases, slept on buses, in stadiums, or on the side of the road, just to play the game.
The machine will now hang up.
These gallant knights of the diamond hustled baseball as skillfully as Minnesota Fats hustled pool. Barnstorming and other Negro League history can be found in baseball's Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, and the Negro League's Baseball Museum in Kansas City, Missouri. This has been a Sport Flight FYI Moments in Negro League History. And for this week's NBA Scoop, Sean Bush from Stats LLC.
All right, James. We're looking at, as far as a couple of things, as what's going on as far as the NBA. One kind of important signing for a team is Dikembe Mutombo. He signed a two-year extension and said basically this is going to be his final contract because he is going to retire after this contract is up. And this is kind of important because towards the end of the season, Mutombo was a great relief as far as coming off the bench, giving about 20, 25 minutes, and was able to help as far as on the defensive side, bringing his defensive presence to the Houston Rockets. So it's going to be very important. And I wouldn't even be surprised if Jeff Van Gundy can shy away from is maybe putting Mutombo as a power forward and having Yao Ming on the both of them on the floor at the same time,
yeah,
which makes it very interesting.
Why wouldn't you go to that during some parts of the game and also for certain matchups?
I think that's very important. But you got to also understand, Mutombo has never been really fast at foot, so you know it's kind of herky-jerky type situation, because you got Tracy McGrady who's who wants to run up and down the court very fast, and then you have Dikembe, who's actually slower than Yao Ming. And let's be honest, Yao Ming ain't the quickest of foot anyway. As much as I like the guy, as much as you hate him, he ain't the swiftest of foot. So you got to really slow the game down for those two.
I didn't say I hated him. I just said I wasn't.
You don't like him.
I was not a fan. I didn't think that he is a budding or a superstar, as some people tend to label him as.
You don't like him. It's just that simple. Call it like it is. Another interesting decision that's going to be happening is Michael Finley's decision of where he's going to basically play next year.
He hasn't made that decision.
He has made this decision. He is basically saying he's going to make the decision today, which is we're taping this on Monday, so the 29th, or Tuesday, the 30th. And he's basically narrowed it down to four teams, the Suns, the Heat, the Spurs, and the Timberwolves. So they all went and met with Finley. Representatives of these four teams met with Finley in Chicago last week.
Well, let me ask you this. The only one that I'm somewhat surprised at are the Timberwolves.
I'm not.
No.
For the simple reason, look what they've done. They've already traded. They traded Sam Cassell away, which was basically a disgruntled employee. And they pretty much is about to go ahead and make a decision on what they're going to do with Sprewell. Let's go ahead and break it down right here. If Finley decides to go with the Timberwolves, that automatically pretty much means Sprewell's name is off the locker because Finley's name is going to be replaced there. And Sprewell will be traded. Sprewell is probably going to get let go anyway. It's just a matter of if it's going to be a sign of trade.
How much does he have on his contract?
This is it.
This is last year?
Yeah. So maybe they can do, because one of the interesting things is they're talking about maybe possibly doing a sign and trade with Denver, which would make some sense because he can get his money by signing with the Timberwolves and then get traded to Denver, because it can also help Denver, because Denver can only offer him the $5 million mid-level exemption.
Exemption, right.
Well, if he can go ahead, because remember, you can sign for your team an extra year and I believe an extra $10 million than anybody else in the league.
Right.
I'm not saying he's going to get the max contract, but he will get a lot more than he could get for, say, Denver.
Uh-huh.
So it could be in their benefit to go ahead and sign him, trade him to Denver, get something in return, then sign Finley. So that is a very interesting process.
And you're saying that Denver would entertain doing that?
I would seem so. Kiki Vandeweghe is the type of person who doesn't have no problem entertaining that. But also,
dealing with malcontent?
Well, true, but look who's the coach. Coach is George Karl. And if George Karl wants to go ahead and have an up-and-down running game, what better person to have than, let's call it like it is, Sprewell used to do that when he was with Golden State and with New York for a long period of time. That's the reason why he got the contract that he did, because of the running up and down West Coast type running
game.
That benefits his game well, so it will benefit Denver if you can have Sprewell on that team. Because let's be honest, you throw ahead and throw Carmelo Anthony and put him together with Sprewell, that's a very interesting backcourt. Then you have an Andre Miller and the speedy, strong Earl Boykins as your backup. That's a nice backcourt to have with a Rashawn Leonard who's coming back from injury as well. So Denver's setting himself up to go ahead and do a major run for the Midwest divisional crown, battling with Minnesota, and it gives him, Sprewell, extra incentive, because you know he's going to be playing Minnesota at least 5-6 times a year.
Right.
Now, here's the other thing. If Finley doesn't sign with the Timberwolves, they do have a potential of a plan B, and that's making a trade with the Toronto Raptors, who's basically, that team is just basically full of disgruntled anyway, most likely because they're playing in Canada, and that's getting Jalen Rose in a trade if Finley does not sign them. And the reason...
You mean get rows in a trade or three well?
No, actually just get a trade to the Timberwolves, period, for somebody else. And the reason saying a lot of people saying this most likely will happen more than Finley going to the Timberwolves is because the general manager of the Raptors, Babcock, used to work for Kevin McHale in Minnesota. So there's a friendship there, so possibly they can work something out. And possibly what the trade will be, probably will be, is Jalen Rose for a draft pick and Michael Olowokandi, because they're saying that is pretty much, he is pretty much is out of Minnesota, Olowokandi. He hasn't been a great pickup when he signed that big long-term deal from Denver when he was with Denver a couple of years ago. So
he's never been a great player, period.
Well, he's never, absolutely right. Well, you know what? You're not going to be a great player, and, you know, your ability to go ahead and play is going to be highly diminished when you get drafted by the Los Angeles Clippers. So he was cursed to start off with. And he hasn't gotten any better ever since.
Well, tell me, what's going on with, I haven't heard anything about Larry Brown and the Knicks.
Well, I think it's probably in Larry Brown's best interest to basically shut up and stay in the Hamptons until the season starts. Because I've already seen promos on MSG talking and promoting about the Knicks basketball, and one of the things he said was, you know, this is where he always wanted to be. I could have swore he said that as far as he wanted to stay in Detroit as well. So you really got to look at the fact of who was basically lying, because there was a lot of rumors and innuendos, and he said stuff between this whole this Detroit situation, and I truly believe he just basically lied through his teeth, and he was been lying through his teeth since the whole thing about him getting interviewed for the Cleveland president job. He was lying through his teeth everywhere there, and he needed a way to get out of Detroit to save himself. Luckily, New York was going to give him a boatload of money because Isaiah Thomas is desperate as heck to fill seats, and hopefully the New York press won't basically crucify him. But it happened, so I think he's going to keep a low profile until training camp begins, which, believe it or not, is about 6 weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
So, so I wouldn't expect to be hearing anything from Larry Brown in very near future.
Well, speaking of the season being only 6 weeks away, the major players in free agency are gone. You're talking about Ray Allen and the Michael Ridds, the Bobby Simmons, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, Kwame Brown, people of that ilk. They are now gone, as well as Antoine Walker. What player is the most desirable of the players remaining in free agency, and what teams are pursuing that player?
Well, right now, pretty much the most desirable person right now is Michael Finley. That is pretty much the last of the big-time, big-name free agency. And like I said earlier in the report, the people who are pretty much, it's down to a final four, which is the Suns, Heat, Spurs, and Timberwolves. And you look at those three, the first three are major contentions of winning championships next year. And adding Finley onto the mix only heightens that anticipation of winning a championship. As far as the most media fit, what the media would love to have, is him going to the Heat.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when you have, I think, this will be the first time in a very long time that you have too much offense, because you look at the Heat's roster.
Well, could it be any more than what Phoenix had last year?
Oh, no. Because let's be honest, Phoenix didn't have a bench. They did not believe in the bench.
Right.
They believed in basically five starters and one person just playing with them. They didn't have a bench. The Heat, if they add Finley onto this bench, they have a starting five, and the three guys come on the bench can go ahead and be starters on any other team in this league. Make no mistake about that. But I think it's too much offense. You only have one ball, and they're going to break down in as far as having communications. Because you look at Jason Williams, he always needs to have the ball and do things. Dwayne Wade has proven to be a superstar and had a breakthrough year last year. Antoine Walker, believe me, he's trying to shoot the ball every time he steps into the building, into the parking lot.
He says that he's going to become a part of the team, and that requires him shooting less.
He hasn't been part. He hasn't been a teammate since Mark Carmel. Mark Carmel, and that's a high school here in Chicago. Okay, you look at Haslam. Well, the only reason he got the big contract he did was because of Shaquille O'Neal being there, and basically he passed the ball and he was wide open. And then you got Shaquille O'Neal. Then you look at, as far as the bench they have James Posey, who played and did very well against with the Grizzlies. And then, oh, yeah, the other players that was actually on the team with the Heat, Alonzo Mourning. You got too many. You have too many offensive players.
Prohibitive favorites to win the East.
They're prohibitive favorites to win it all. And they would still be, they'd be pretty much, a lot of people keep on saying this, as Finley comes onto the team, will actually break the Bulls' record 96 for most wins in the regular season. I think that's pushing it.
The Bulls only lost, what, 10 games?
They only lost 10 games. I think that's pushing it a little bit, but they do have the potential. Now you look at the Suns will be a perfect fit because he will replace Joe Johnson and actually will be actually better than Joe Johnson because he can put up the threes. His durability's come into question as far as Finley.
What, doesn't his relationship with Steve Nash, doesn't that push it over in favor of Phoenix?
That's definitely going to help. But also the relationship, and this is why it's going to help the Timberwolves as well, because he has a stronger relationship with Kevin Garnett. You're talking about basically two Chicago guys. Who does the summer pickup games here in Chicago? So that same relationship that's going to help the Suns might actually hurt the Suns because he has a better relationship with Kevin Garnett.
Before I let you go, we are aware that Steve Belkin has now been bought out by the other partners with the Atlanta Hawks, which allowed the trade for Joe Johnson
to go
through from Phoenix. But it's my understanding that Belkin decided to step back and allow this to happen as a result of the NBA and David Stern promising him the opportunity to be a majority owner of another NBA team. Is there that possibility with an existing team? There has not been any talk of expansion, has there? It's just the possibility of an existing owner selling his team, and if so, where are we looking? Because it's my understanding that Michael Jackson was first in Michael Jackson. Michael Jordan was first.
Yeah, Michael Jackson is not picking nothing.
Well, Michael Jackson's birthday is today. He's 47 today, so maybe that's why it was on my brain.
Cool.
But Michael Jordan is also looking to purchase a NBA team. So.
And they said the exact same thing. I don't think expansion is going to happen because it just really doesn't make no sense. I think right now what they have, 30 teams, they have the balance divisions and everything like that. So I don't think adding another team that would just really mess that up or confuse that. The only possibility to do one of two things. You either add two teams, therefore you have 32. Once again, you got to reshuffle everything. That one really won't probably happen. Or a team that is going to potentially relocate because one of the things they are trying to do, and I think they're going to use the 2007 All-Star Game by playing it in a non-NBA team, a non-NBA arena, is basically giving that city a tryout to see if that is a potentially good spot to relocate one of the existing teams, quote-unquote Orlando Magic, to one of those cities. And the potential is, and a lot of rumors saying, a.k.a. Orlando Magic, will be bought out and relocated to Vegas. That is a key. And then what you just said brings up a very, very good point. Because Belkin has been tried twice to be a majority owner of a team. He was the main competition to Bob Johnson for the Charlotte franchise. He ultimately lost. And then he went ahead and came in for the Atlanta because he wanted to go ahead and own the team. But now he wants majority, and that's why he really basically put a block and was trying to flex as much muscle as he could with this whole situation. So now with Stern, and this, I have not heard anything about this, saying he's going to be first in line. If I'm not mistaken, he said the same thing a couple of years ago to Jordan, which, by the way, Jordan is building something in Vegas as far as a hotel and casino and health club resort there. So, you know, the groundwork is there for Jordan to get a franchise to move to Vegas. It's going to be very interesting, though, because this could be a potential as far as, you know, having a team in Vegas, because that's why a lot of people don't want to put a pro team. Only minor leagues, but minor league teams have done well in Vegas. But they don't want a professional team for the not only the gambling, for the potential of gambling on the games, because the Maloofs has the Palms, and they don't allow sports betting at all in that hotel and casino. They don't allow it. So one of the things is you can't have no sports betting in there. But the potential of just gambling, period, in Vegas is something that the NBA and all professional teams are very wary of. So it's going to be very interesting to see. But I would not be surprised if you see the All-Star game going to more non-NBA cities for them to basically be trialed.
For a dress rehearsal.
One of the rumors was for 2008 was actually Paris, France. Now, I'm not saying they're trying to put a professional, they're not putting an existing team in Paris because that just doesn't make no sense. But that is the, remember one of his, Stern's initial goals is having an international presence in the NBA. It would not surprise me if they try to make a division of international division in the NBA, and you just treat it like a West Coast team doing an East Coast trip. They also have an international trip as well. So that's something to be looking at a couple of years down the line to see how that shakes out.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to your report next week on your NBA scoop. I'd like to remind everyone that our podcast is sponsored by UrbanCollegeSports.com. That's UrbanCollegeSports.com. When you want to get all of the information that you desire from your HBCUs, your historically black college and universities, your game scores, your classic information, check out the website, UrbanCollegeSports.com. And speaking of HBCUs, the first game of the college season started last week, and that was at Division II Morehouse and Benedict. Morehouse entertained Benedict, and Morehouse was not a very good host as they beat up Benedict 20-17. And check out UrbanCollegeSports.com for this coming week's games and also for their final scores as well. And now this week's Sportflight FYI's aficionado question of the week. Of the number one overall NFL draft picks as far as quarterbacks are concerned, give me the name of the only two quarterbacks to win Super Bowls with their original teams. Of the overall number one NFL draft picks at the quarterback position, give me the only two quarterbacks to win Super Bowls with their original or drafting teams. Over the past 30 years, there have only been two. that were drafted number one overall and were able to win a Super Bowl with their team. That information you can find on our website at urbancollegesports.com, all lowercase letters, urbancollegesports.com. And as we move to our next segment, we will talk about, I gave the score. The last thing that we wanted to discuss, and we'll probably put that off until next week, where we were going to talk about the top five players, and we will have that for our next week's show, the top five NFL players, as we had the top five NFL coaches this week. Also, join us next week for the NFL season preview, our predictions for the upcoming 2005 season, as well as our top five NFL players today. So, for Sean Bush out of Chicago, Nicole Smith out of the Queen City, and yours truly, James Hill, remember, make each day your masterpiece, and never has so few owed so much to so many. Peace. We're out of here.